Amen. Well, it's been an exciting morning, and Blair, I believe as she was walking out, says she stuck the landing, which of course she did. Stuck the landing. I love it. I invite anyone to stick the landing someday. If you haven't been baptized, this is your open opportunity to stick the landing. You can do it. So a couple of public service announcements besides that today. You notice around campus here, especially the front, there's a lot of voting signs. There's voting going on everywhere. Be a good citizen and vote. That's my PSA for that. And welcome Grayson Landrum, our new student minister. His first Sunday is today. His wife, Darby, right next to him. We're grateful that he's here. And then finally, we've been announcing or have been announcing for about 3 months now that we're changing our church management software, how we check in to a thing called Planning Center. If you have not jumped on board, you need to do so. We found out there's about 45 people in our church that still give online through our old system called Realm. If you are one of those 45 people, please make the change, okay? Be the change, all right? Do that. If you have questions, you can go to the Connection Center afterwards. Teresa will be able to answer your questions about how that happened. So those are all important things. But we're going to be in Nehemiah today, as you can clearly read. Nehemiah chapter 2. Last week, we talked about the God-centered burden that Nehemiah had and how God was with him, had his hand upon him, and made a way for him to return to Jerusalem with free lumber, which is amazing. And I also talked about last week and the week before how Nehemiah is one of the figures in the Old Testament that point to the person of Jesus Christ. He's an Old Testament figure that points us to the person of Jesus Christ, because the entire Bible is focused on pointing us to the person of Jesus. And Nehemiah helps us do that. And today we're going to see how Nehemiah goes to his city, Jerusalem, to survey the brokenness. Someone else did that in the New Testament. His name is Jesus. He went to his community to survey the brokenness of Jerusalem and the people. And so then Nehemiah identifies with the people's shame. We're going to read where he takes on sort of the shame and the frustration and the brokenness of his own people. Someone else did that. His name is Jesus. He took on the shame of all of humanity on himself when he died on the cross. And Nehemiah came to his city to rebuild. Jesus came to restore lives. And so just as a picture, I don't want you ever to look at, and we were talking about the Old Testament, ever think, well, how does this apply? Well, it gives us a glimpse into the person of Jesus Christ. But it also gives us some very practical understanding how we, as the people of God, should live our lives. And this section that we're going to look at in Nehemiah 2 speaks a great deal to Nehemiah's leadership ability. All of us, whether you're 13 or 83, you have opportunity to be a leader in the kingdom of God, to lead out in a way that impacts the lives of other people. And so we're going to look at Nehemiah chapter 2 today, verse 11, and kind of discover some of those traits and tools that we can use to make an eternal difference in our community as we see brokenness around us. So Nehemiah 2, verse 11. So I went to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And then I arose in the night, and I and a few men with me, and I told no one what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me but the one on which I rode. I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate. And I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool. There was no room for the animal that was under me to pass. Then I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the wall. And I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. And I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were to do the work. And then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned, Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer suffer derision. And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us rise up and build. And so they strengthened their hands for the good work. They strengthened their hands for the good work. Nehemiah, as he's entered Jerusalem now and he surveys what's happening, he gets there and he doesn't immediately go to work. You know, sometimes when you and I get to a situation that's messed up, we immediately want to charge in and show everybody how smart we are, how skilled we are, and we start putting pieces together, grabbing stuff. You know, maybe it's your own house, your gate outside, is broken, and so you jimmy it, and you put a, you know, 2x4 there, and you get it right, or one of your kids has knocked a hole in the wall, and so you put a beautiful piece of art in front of it just to hide it. Like, we sort of make things work. We just want to solve the problem immediately. Well, Nehemiah gets to the situation that is dire and nearly hopeless. And instead of just sort of jumping in, he waits for 3 days. He pauses. He doesn't get impulsive. He doesn't get aggressive with the people and say, how come you haven't been doing anything for these last few years? He simply waits. And he assesses and he's patient and he listens and he watches. And so it's just a clear indicator to me that sometimes leadership requires patience. Sometimes it requires preparation and not just to rush headlong into a moment and act like you have all the answers. It takes a moment for us to watch and to listen and to wait. To know that trusting God doesn't negate planning. Trusting God doesn't mean that we don't need to be prepared. And so Nehemiah comes to this moment and he gets there. And oh, by the way, he's got permission from the king to get all the lumber from the forest. And so let's just charge ahead and get going. Like, instructions, who cares? Let's just start rebuilding. No, he waits and surveys. He exercises some restraint in the moment and some reflection to look around and to see, to ride his donkey or his horse around town, kind of through every aspect of town, to see what really is the situation that we're dealing with. How bad is it? Just like when you go into surgery, you're hopeful that your surgeon doesn't walk into the room and say, where's the scalpel? Let's go. Like, that's not what you want. You're hoping that prior to that, he's looked at your MRI. He has read the x-ray. He understands your medical condition. He's consulted with other doctors before he walks in and says, okay, slicer open. You know, like, that's not what you want. No, you want some patience, some preparation. You want some wisdom at stake, and that's what Nehemiah is gathering here. And his waiting 3 days is not activity. He's getting ready. He's getting ready to do something amazing. But it's not going to happen in that moment. We sometimes have to resist the urge to do something, and we as Texans, we struggle with that. Like, we want to just jump in and fix it and get it done. And sometimes it means taking a step back and looking, arising at night and not telling anyone, while we survey, inspect, process, prepare. Because often the most important thing to happen is behind the scenes, not in the moment. And so Nehemiah is getting ready for the thing that is most important. And so he uses those 3 nights to prepare, to get ready, to survey. And he doesn't tell anybody. He sort of keeps the mission private initially. We're not great at sort of holding things in. We like to tell everybody. Like, we're on social media. Hey, I'm here, da-da-da-da-da, look at me, you know. We have a bad habit of just telling everything about everything. And there's times when discretion is necessary so that the information gets out correctly, so that the project, and in this case, restoring the entire city, is done with the right way in the right time and with everyone on board, not just some. And so he keeps it private, and he takes the effort to go personally and look at every gate, look at the wall, see the fire damage, to see where, oh, my animal can't get past here, so I've got to climb over this. And going around the outside of the city, every key part of the city, I'm going to evaluate, I'm going to look at, I'm going to investigate firsthand. I mean, most of this passage is a detailed narrative of the geography of Jerusalem. I know it's riveting detail to read. I mean, the Dung Gate and the Valley Gate, man, that's exciting stuff. But it's an indication to us of how important it is that Nehemiah went very detailed. This is a real physical issue that his people are experiencing. And I wonder how often you and I walk through life sort of oblivious to everything around us, refusing to pause and wait and look and survey and investigate to see where the brokenness is, to see where the lostness is, to see where the darkness is, to see where lives are in shambles. We're too busy doing our thing and leading the way, and we haven't paused and looked and seen. God, where do you need to restore lives? God, where are people broken that need healing? Where is there hopelessness that a relationship with Jesus Christ will bring hope? Because this isn't pie in the sky investigation here that Nehemiah is doing. He's going around town very deliberately, understanding the task that God had given him, the burden that God had given him. And so he's going to do the proper assessment, because it's not just patience and preparation. I need to have a realistic understanding of what's happening. That's what real leaders do. They have an understanding of what's around them. They've made the careful assessment of what the situation is. And he's made that assessment by walking around town, by going on his donkey around town, by seeing, like, this is not symbolic brokenness. This is the gate won't open. It's burned down. My city is in ruins. Just like when a contractor goes to renovate a house, he doesn't go on assumptions. He's looking at the foundation. He's reading architectural plans. He's checking for load-bearing walls. He's going up in the attic, on the roof. He's investigating every part of that, because one wrong move and the whole place comes crashing down even worse. The same is true on a spiritual level. The same is true when it comes to our relationship with the Lord. That sometimes our own brokenness or the brokenness around us needs an honest assessment, like, how am I doing? Where are the areas of my life that I've just sort of tolerated, and they're not really working properly? And I just, like, I'm okay with it. I've put the photo over it to hide the hole in the wall. Where in my community are there people in need who are hurting? Have I actually paid attention to that? Am I looking into that? How can I gain more information on knowing how we can address the brokenness around us? Are we doing that? Nehemiah reminds us several times in this passage about what God had put on his heart. That this wasn't just some way to get out of work for a few months. That this was a burden that he had been given to change the future, to change the future of his city, to change the future of his people. And so he took it very seriously. Because not only had God given him this great burden, but he also knew that God's hand was upon him. That was the great opportunity. God is with me on this. I believe it to be true. And so here I am. We're going to go. We're going to find out where the dark places are, where the broken places are, where the hurt is, where things are in shambles that we need to restore. Because you and I don't invent vision. We don't invent things to do. No, a real vision that comes from God is received. And Nehemiah had received this great vision. It was a burden on the one hand. It burdened his heart. But on the other hand, he saw it as a tremendous opportunity to bring restoration and wholeness and hope to a people who are broken and tired and weary and vulnerable. And vision was given to him. It wasn't his ambition, it was his calling. And so now he's here. Like a sailboat who has had that great wind blow those sails forward on a path to bring restoration to his people. And that's where he is. So he's received this great vision. He understands where he's supposed to be. And now it's time to sort of reveal it to the crowd. Like, hey, this is where we're going. This is what we're doing. Because Nehemiah knew that it wasn't his ambition. It wasn't his grand idea. No, it was from the Lord. And he recognized that God was the source of that vision, the source of the burden, the source of the opportunity. He knew because God's hand was upon him. And because of the testimony of his brothers, God had spoken to him that he needed to come and restore his city. Because if you look there in verse 17 again, let me encourage you to keep your Bible open. Verse 17, he says, "You see the trouble we are in. You see it, we're in it. Come, let us build." You see the trouble we are in. Not the trouble you're in, the trouble we're in. He joins with his countrymen and says, we're in a mess here. Our city is vulnerable. Our people are broken. They're heartbroken. They're vulnerable. And we have to do something about it. Because Nehemiah was living his best life in Persia. He was the cupbearer to the king. He had access to the king. He was living a good life, and he chose to leave that to come and restore his people. And so he identifies with them. He doesn't just put it all on them. He joins them in their trouble, in their ruin, in their shame. He joins them. He doesn't downplay it. He doesn't brush it aside. You know, sometimes we're pretty good at downplaying the bad things in life. Because we don't like pain, we don't like heartache, we don't like struggle. And so we sort of just push it under the rug, or when someone asks us, how are you doing? Oh, good, good, fine, great, perfect. Until you walk out of those doors and you start crying because life is terrible. Right? We put on a happy face for everybody else, but Nehemiah is pretty honest with them. Like, we're in trouble, boys. Like, big trouble. We're in it. Just like a firefighter, when he goes into a burning building, he's not whispering softly, hey, there's some smoke around, you probably ought to leave. Like, that's not what firefighters do. No, they're like, get out, the building's on fire. I mean, they share the reality of the moment. And that's what Nehemiah is doing. And sometimes we need to share the realities of the moment. The realities of the moment. And they're not always good. There's some good, but none of us are perfect. We're always surrounded by sin and need and brokenness and decline. And I look at even our own church, First Baptist Friendswood. And I look around and I think, there are more empty chairs today in this room than there were in February of 2020. That's true in both services. Now, we all know what happened in March of 2020. I was in Indiana watching a baseball game. And the world fell apart. And 40% of the people decided not to come back. And then, by God's providence, some other things happened over the next couple of years that created more struggle and chaos. But that's a reality, because the empty seat next to you or around you represents a life that hasn't been changed by the gospel. And sometimes that's hard for us to swallow. because we're not thinking about it in that moment. But that's the reality, is that if all of God's people here and the other 15 churches in Friendswood proper did that, we wouldn't have any empty seats. But that's the reality. We celebrate today with Blair her baptism, but we haven't baptized an adult since July of last year. And I think he's in the room even. Yes, he is. We haven't baptized an adult since then, someone over 18, since July of last year. That's a reality. We've baptized students and kids. But we have this great vision of strengthening families, loving neighbors, transforming our community, and I would argue we're 1 for 3 on those. And if we were playing baseball, we'd be in the Hall of Fame, but the Lord's standard is not that. So we have work to do. There are people in your neighborhood, in your schools, at your workplace, at cheer and baseball and dance and band and everywhere else that are broken, and the gate of their life is on fire, and they need us, and God's called us to do that, and it's challenging. I know it is, because we live in a God-conscious community. It doesn't matter where you live in Southeast Houston. We live in a God-conscious community, and it's easy to hide brokenness. It was not easy for Jerusalem to hide their brokenness. It was very obvious. It's easy for us to hide our brokenness, and yet God desires us as the people of God to step in to that, to rise up and build, to strengthen our hands for the good work, because that's what Nehemiah was doing. He was calling others to share in that great vision, to rebuild, to restore, to bring hope again. And that's what he's called us to do as the people of God here in this community. The Tri-County area, I call it. That's what he called us to do. Because even though we're not running on perfection yet, we never will be probably, because most of us are sinners, right? Most of us. All of us are sinners. We're not going to be perfect. But I'm going to tell you some great things that are happening in the life of our church. For 2 years, we had zero babies in our preschool. Like 0 to 1.5 years old, we had 0 of those people. None for 2 years. Young families were non-existent in our church for a couple of years. And by the grace of God, we now have, I went in there this morning to our babies, and there were 2 in there, and the third one was not here today, or maybe they came at 11, I don't see you, but maybe you're here. And then the class above is bigger, our elementary is growing, it's amazing. I know at least 3 families in our church that are pregnant, which is awesome. Like, that's amazing that in 2 years we've sort of dropped the average age of the church. We have a thriving young adult ministry that's, most of them are sitting over here, and it's growing. Besides just the summer and Christmas group, we have young adults coming. We have some amazing things. We're a tremendous resource for our community. If you want to see some amazing young people today and you like fashion, we are hosting the Friendswood High School Senior Fashion Show over at our Family Life Center. All 3 of my boys participated in that because they're so handsome and beautiful. So go over there. We baseball banquet, cheer banquet. We're hosting the voting. Like, we're a blessing to the community, and you have no idea what that means to people out there. Every week, someone tells me, David, thank you for hosting and fill in the blank. And it's great to be a blessing to the community, but I want to be a transformative force in our community for the gospel. I don't want to just be a blessing. I want us to see do mighty things. We have no debt in our church, no debt. All of our financial needs are met. You are generous people all the time, every week, every month. Anytime we ask for something, we have a special project, it's amazing. We've baptized dozens and dozens and dozens of people over the last 3 years. And some of you in this room, you're adults, and I know your story, and you need to be baptized, so here's my, it's time to get wet. Let's do it. And then we're going to celebrate you, and that's going to be amazing. But the reality is, as I think about reading Nehemiah, and here he is, he saw the task that needed to be accomplished to restore Jerusalem. Our task is to restore the lives of the people in our community, to bring them hope and encouragement. And when you and I catch sort of that God-sized vision, we're going to respond. Like, it's hard not to. Like, when you catch a God-sized vision, you want to act, you want to go, you want to move, and that's when God's work moves forward, is when people of faith get moving. And that's the calling for us, is to assess and be ready and look and be prepared and then get moving, to love our neighbors well, to reach the families in our community, whether you're a family of one or a family of nine, it doesn't matter. We want to reach and love and strengthen families. We want to see our community transformed for the gospel. And so let us rise up and build. That's the calling, to rise up and build. And just like a coach on a basketball team doesn't just draw up the plan for the game, he draws up the plan and he inspires his team that they know, they believe, they're confident that not just they will accomplish the plan, but they're going to win. That's what God does for us. He reminds us over and over again of his faithfulness, of his greatness. Did we sing about that four times today? Yes. Because it's true. God is great. He is faithful. He is sure. He is always with you. He is the one who instills this great vision in us to go and change our world. And so let us rise up and build. That's the calling that all of us can jump onto, that we can all strengthen ourselves for the good work. Let's get to the good work. That's my prayer for all of us. Will you pray with me?